Good morning. Today is Friday, October the 29th. Joining us this morning, Simple Country Therapist, Mr. Lou Quimby. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. And a gracious good morning to you, sir.
Thank you. Are you ready for our question for this morning?
I'm ready.
All right. Why are traffic lights red, yellow, and green?
Christmas?
The first traffic light was invented around 1912 by Lester Weyer, who was then head of the traffic division of Salt Lake City Police Department. His light contained only two lamps, red and green. These were the colors he took from lights then in use on seagoing vessels and railroad signals, and they meant stop and go. Red has often been the color chosen when the goal was to attract attention, since red, more than any other color, heightens nervous tension in people. Green, on the other hand, has a neutral effect on the human emotions, so it was natural that that would indicate an okay to proceed.
Yeah.
When it was decided to add a caution lamp, yellow was chosen because, other than white, it was the most distinguishable from red and green. White, of course, was not desired since it could be confused with many other white lights, such as street lights, that might be near that traffic light.
Oh.
There we go.
Smart.
All right. Logic pervades and is ingratiated by us this morning. Okay. Superstitions. Yeah, we got this little thing on Sunday called Halloween, and then we've got All Saints Day and all kinds of stuff as we roll into the holiday season. Where do superstitions come from?
Oh, probably bad dreams back in the days of fire in a cave, keeping the wolves away, hopes and dreams and superstitions, things that go bang in the night.
Yeah.
And then people build on that, and all of a sudden they get gremlins and ghosts and all sorts of strange things that they manufacture in their head because that's all they know. There's a fire in front of a cave to keep the goblins away.
It's interesting how many parallels there are in different cultures about superstitions. We were up in Oregon, your old stomping grounds. Actually, we kind of surrounded your old stomping grounds from the coast out to, and inland to Bend. And it seemed like everybody was trying to lay claim to Bigfoot.
To Bigfoot?
Bigfoot. That was, you know, it wasn't ocean. It wasn't clam chowder. It was Bigfoot, which I found interesting because, by golly, he's our guy down here. That's where the film was, right?
Well, they got one in Minnesota, too.
Yeah, and then, you know, it's, Yeti and the Abominable, and everybody seems to have something akin to a Bigfoot.
Right.
Other than probably Taiwan and, you know, some of the places where, you know, you're swimming rather than stomping around in the woods.
Well, if you think about being in a crib as a baby, and daddy comes in to pick you up out of the crib, that's pretty much a Bigfoot apparition right there.
Sure.
And that goes into the unconscious and the subconscious. And then you start confabulating around that with words when you can speak. And then there's fairy tales. Interesting thing about superstition, there's a case of a child who had two science parents, like a chemist and a physicist, and they're pretty much all rational people, and the child was not doing very well at all in school, and they took him to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, okay, after understanding the background and the family dynamics, he said, start reading the child Grimm's fairy tales, and they started doing that. And the kid straightened right up and got good grades in school and became a normal kid, which had to do with tapping into the unconscious or subconscious something or other another about how kids think, feel, and believe consciously and unconsciously. And I thought that was interesting that it require the children require not only rational raising, but fairy tale raising as well to appeal to their unconscious and preconscious motivations and understanding and fantasy and that sort of thing.
So it's a
very wide world about superstition, where it comes from. The troll that lives under the bridge.
Billy
Goat Gruff, yeah. And that has to do with things that go bang in the night or bump in the night. When you look at early on in our ancestry, the night was pretty scary stuff. And all they had was fire. And one of the big jobs was to keep the fire going to ward off the animals in front of the cave, which was a real issue. Wolves, and big saber-toothed cats would come up to the cave looking for something to eat. So they had to have fire there to keep them at bay.
So superstitions, I guess, are kind of ground in reality. Is there a parallel to mythology? It's just a fancier word, or is mythology something different than superstition?
Well, mythology has a lot of storytelling involved. So there's a lot of narrative that goes along with mythology, as opposed to just a plain, simple superstition, like three on a match, for example. Who knows where that comes from? But mythology has a lot of storytelling involved in it, and it's rich in detail and implication. You look at Beowulf, for example. there's a phrase called to be grendelized, or to grendelize somebody else, which means you rip off their arm and beat them to death with their own arm.
Right.
which is pretty fantastic when you think about it. Requires superhuman strength and skill. And so there's a whole story that goes with that. It includes family members and clan members and households. So mythology has a lot more story levels to it.
We'll continue with that thought when we come back. It's 8:19.
Join Warren Eckstein on KINS in the 6 o'clock hour as he explains pet behaviors, different fun facts, tips, and all sorts of info about your animals and the way they think and act.
Here are just some of the things that kids learn when they have pets in their life.
If you're an animal lover, this is absolutely the program you need to hear.
You know, vocalizations are a very important part of animal communication and their language. Hi, this is Warren Eckstein. Hear my daily pet tip weekdays on KINS FM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. Lou, before the break, we were talking a little bit about mythology and the difference or distinctions between mythology and superstition. And what my takeaway from it was that there's a lot more detail with mythology than there is with superstition. It might be an easier definition of explanation.
The telling of the story. So there has to be a story first, and then the details get added on generation after generation so that the story becomes the important part. And you think about when you went to summer camp, and if you had one of those camp counselors who was good at storytelling, and you'd particularly the scary ones, and you'd sit around the campfire before going to bed, and that's a magical time where you're sitting there facing the campfire, staying warm, and maybe having toasted marshmallows or something. And then the camp counselor starts telling this ghost story. And then at the climax of the story, he goes, boo.
Yeah.
And everybody goes, oh. And they go to bed with all that fun storytelling involved in it. So mythology has a lot of storytelling with lots of details in themselves. And you can get lost in some of the storytelling. So it's fun to make up myths, too.
Well, in the past, we've talked about family traditions this time of the year. Yeah, nobody can really trace back to the origin of it, but that it was something that was built upon and then perhaps embellished and developed to what it is today.
Yeah.
Are a lot of the myths and superstitions, are they able to be traced back to a specific?
Traced?
Yeah, common point?
If you look at a lot of Greek myths and stories, the myth of Sisyphus, for example, who is condemned to rolling a stone uphill only to lose track of it at the top and it rolls back down. So he has to go back down and roll the stone back up again. The myth of Sisyphus is mythological and has to do with the human error of doing the same thing over and over and over again, hoping for different results. So there's a psychological reason for lots of the myths, and the story itself seems strange, maybe on first glance, but if you look into the basis for it, it has to do with human frailties and how we keep doing the same things, for example, hoping. And then there's the myths of, well, like Icarus flying too close to the sun,
right,
and the wax on his wings melt, or the Iliad with the Herculean and mythical lifelong tale of conquering beasts and storms, and mythical beasts trying to eat all the sailors. He lashes himself to the mast so he doesn't hear he can hear it.
The sirens,
but he
yeah.
Can't respond to the siren song. So there's a lot of psychological value in looking at a lot of the tales, the long, convoluted tales. And it requires quite a bit of interest and some research to fully appreciate a lot of the mythology, what it means, what the implications are for people.
That's one of the things that, you know, the limited, you know, a couple years of kind of not studying hard, but familiarizing myself with the mythology, is that there seemed to be always a core, either a lesson, a core element, something in there that was maybe not the genesis of it, but the reason for the tale or the story, the walkaway, if you will, I guess would be today's terminology. And then the oversimplification that, well, this is a way to explain the unexplainable.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of cultural things that we can't explain that we do. I don't buy into that one 100%. Am I wrong in that?
Don't buy into what 100%?
That it's a cultural explanation. That this is why we do things rather than kind of like a broad stroke, perhaps to maybe cover up why we do things rather than to explain why we do things.
It's an aspect of why we do things. That's one of the things about human behavior is there are a handful of basics, but on top of that, there's many dimensions to why people do what they do. If you look at the three basics we learn in childhood that every child in the world is exposed to, is affection, belonging, and control. And if affection and belonging are soft or distorted or absent, then kids develop control struggles. And one of the ways to exercise control is to build a framework inside our head about how things are or could be or should be. And then we proceed to live that way to see if it'll realize itself. So the mythology depends upon internal as well as external factors, you know, like the fire in front of the cave to keep the animals away. So it's a combination of a lot of things, and it makes studying human behavior fascinating and very rich and very deep. And it's multidimensional. It isn't all that simple.
Well, we'll get into some of that complexity when we come back. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. Lou, with the superstitions, mythology, with Halloween coming up, there are religious reasons why there are, the seasons change is part of what Halloween is all about, is a fall festival. Some of the superstitions around Halloween, though, there's the dark side and then there's the not so dark side. How do these two truths, quote unquote truths, coexist simultaneously?
Well, there's a fear and excitement, the flip sides of the coin, fear and excitement. If you think about going out doing trick-or-treating as a kid, depending how young you are, you go up to a strange door, and if your parents are with you, but you're old enough to go up the door by yourself, that's a fearful but exciting flip of the coin situation. And the door opens and somebody goes, yeah, what do you want? As if they didn't know.
Right.
Or they go, well, hello there, young man. What can I do for you? Trick or treat. Well, here's a little pig endy for you. Fear and excitement are flip sides of the same coin. It's interesting. Some people are excitement freaks like Evel Knievel, and so they keep going for the exciting occurrence, and they overlook the fear, they compartmentalize their fear, they stuff their fear, they don't pay attention to the fear, they override the fear. So there's a number of things about that, like the headless horseman that runs through
right
the hollow.
The Ichabod Crane.
Head in his hand,
yep.
Under his arm. Kids hear that and they go, gee, that's interesting. How'd that happen? And so somebody tells them some story, and then it goes away. And they think about it, or they tuck it away in their brain somehow. And sometimes it means nothing. And sometimes kids will build on that in their fantasy.
So as we look at this weekend and All Hallows Eve and All Saints Day, there's religious components to that also, either that have been the foundational building blocks for these holidays and then the traditions surrounding it, or attempts to neutralize the previous cultures' attempts at explanation and insert in their own definition. The acceptance of mythology or superstitions is something that's interesting also. I would think that you need to have a willing listener or receiver of the message before anything really can start happening. Is that a fair statement?
I think so. one of the things that religion has done is it expanded its reach and influence throughout the world was many religions accepted local mythologies, holidays, superstitions benignly, and sometimes certain ones were banned outright. But they tended to, if they wanted to maintain their religious grasp in the new area, to accept some of the local beliefs. So they included them in the, like the holiday stuff, Halloween, for example, as a gift, if you please, to the local populations. So the populations were more liable to accept the religion because some of their beliefs were incorporated into that. And as that expanded throughout the world, it gets diluted and institutionalized depending upon the circumstances.
As a way to increase the acceptance of whatever the base message is.
Yeah.
So with things that are truly unexplainable to a culture, sun coming up. Where does it go from mythology, or instead of a myth, it turns into a religious explanation?
Yeah, if you look at the Druids and the ring in England.
Oh yeah.
What's it called? Oh dear me.
I was thinking
Stonehenge.
Yeah, Stone Age. I was thinking Aztecs and Mayan Indians.
And then the original, one of the original outcomes of keeping track of the heavens was when to plant and when to harvest. And that was important simply for survival. And so early, before Stonehenge even, early beliefs were about the sun god and the moon god and the Venus god, and so they started developing mythology around the rising and setting of the sun. Egypt, of course, was great on the rising and setting of the sun.
Right. Well, and then the ranking of the gods also.
You know, who was, now we get back to
who was most important. Yeah, obviously
Greek and Roman mythology, and which gods were important, and some gods came to earth, and Leda and the swan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the sun god seemed to be pretty common across the board as a way to explain what wasn't really explainable at that point in time.
Right, life-giving, the warmth of the sun in the morning.
Right, so as we look around us today, what would be a parallel example of what we've been referencing for past civilizations?
Past civilizations?
Yeah. Yeah, like the Druids as an example, or Stonehenge, or those explanations. Are there modern day mythologies?
Well, there are modern day Druids.
Yeah.
And there's modern day sun worshippers. As far as the gods that can save us, now you're getting into politics.
Right. Well, I would say, you know, it's, to me, an element of superstition is doing things almost from inertia rather than understanding really what's behind it. Halloween is a perfect example. You know, if people took the time to see what the parallels were, it's kind of almost like Oktoberfest for some.
The continual battle between rationality and irrationality. You look at the flat earthers who say the earth is flat, and you look at all their explanations for why that's true. But I keep thinking about some of the early world views that the earth was a flat earth, and it was supported by a turtle. And I go, right. Where'd that come from?
Yeah. Yeah. Or Atlas, if you prefer.
Or Atlas, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting stuff. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:48.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time, it's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Lou Quimby. Lou, earlier on you had said that fear and excitement are opposite sides of the same coin. Fear, if there are people that are motivated by excitement, there got to be people who are motivated by fear. Is that where the Halloween movies and things of that nature that are around this time of the year, is that why they've been so popular?
Well, fear... There's a toxic fear and there's benign fear. Toxic fear, for example, comes when you're raised by physically abusive parents and you get afraid of every little twitch. If, for example, if you meet somebody and, let's take Rotary, for example. There's milling about in the beginning. And people are talking and chatting and visiting. And you come up behind somebody and you put an arm on their shoulder. And all of a sudden their shoulders flinch and they shrink. That's sometimes a sign that they're afraid of being hit. So that can come from toxic fear. And there's benign fear. People go to scary movies because they like the excitement that's generated by the fear. And because they're in a movie theater, they know that lights are going to come on at the end, and then they can go home. But during the movie, there's all sorts of scary things that happen, and they go, whoa, and they get that little flash of fear, turns into excitement.
Kind of like the adrenaline rush associated
yeah.
with it. Yeah,
a miniature rush. And then everything turns out to be okay. And then lights come on and they go home and they talk about what a good scary movie it was.
Which for some of us, that phrase is never uttered. Scary movie. Yeah,
what
no.
What cracks me up is when people cover their eyes with their hand, except that they spread their fingers apart so they can see through their hands. They're acting all scared, but they're still watching.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, there's a reason why I still go to the animated Disney and not...
The fear and excitement cycle.
Yeah.
Now, which is fine. There's lots of people who like to go see the slasher movies.
The fear or that adrenaline rush that comes from it, is it parallel to like why some people like roller coasters also?
Sure.
There's a commonality there?
Yeah, the nice slow clackety, clackety, clackety climb to the top, and then whoa, all the way down to the bottom. And then another up the hill, and then down the hill, and up and down, and up and down, which are carefully engineered by the designers to get the most bang for their buck.
Yeah, then there's some of us that go, well, and that was supposed to be a blank with no bullets in it, too. This week at the movie theater, and you go, well, you know, it's and I suppose that's part of this is that even with the adrenaline rush and the confidence that you have, and you know that it's safe, but there's still that one lingering, well, maybe,
yeah,
and that kind of makes it worthwhile for folks.
But you know you're going to leave the movie theater, and you know you're going to get off the roller coaster.
Yeah, yeah, one way or the other.
Oh, mercy.
Oh, well, have a happy and safe, and if you want scary or if you don't want scary, tame Halloween on Sunday.
You betcha.
All righty, buddy. Thanks.
Sure thing. Bye-bye.
All righty. See ya. See everybody on Monday.